of Joseph, this wonderful account that we have in the book of Genesis of the life of Joseph, the son of Jacob. And as we begin, I want just to read some words spoken by Joseph after he had come to power in Egypt, had been married, and he had two sons. And the first was called Manasseh, and he said that he'd given that name because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. And then a second son named Ephraim, and this time he said it is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. And we're going to look at Joseph's experience and to see the way in which he lived with integrity in times of adversity. His early life was a very difficult life, as we shall see. And yet, through it all, Joseph maintained his integrity. It seems to me that this theme is a relevant theme for us today, as we live in a world which is not easy, as we face many challenges to our faith, a lack of sympathy towards Christian people, Bible-believing Christians, and yet the importance of maintaining our integrity, living a Christian life, no matter what is happening, and no matter how many difficulties we may face. I think it's very important to understand Joseph correctly. Now, during my time in Deeside, I was there for 20 years, I did two series on the life of Joseph. And when I preached the first series, I had read a book which suggested that Joseph really was something of a spoiled brat. He was his father's favorite son. And because of that, God sought to straighten him out and put him through a series of bad experiences in order to prepare him for the role that he would play later when he rose to prominence in Egypt. As I read that, I thought, yes, that seems to make sense, and I preached a series accordingly. Some years later, when we came back to Joseph again, I was adopting the same approach. And a lady came to me and said, you know, it's interesting that you're saying that about Joseph, because I've been reading a commentator, a well-known commentator, and he thinks the opposite. He thinks that Joseph was a man of integrity. He was a righteous man who suffered unjustly. Now, that Joseph is, in fact, a type, someone who points forward to the Lord Jesus. Now, preachers, when they've preached a series, tend to want to stick with the line that they've taken and to defend it and justify it. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, I think that's right. I think Joseph was a righteous man, not a sinless man, but a righteous man. And he suffered unjustly. And in the middle of it all, in the midst of it all, he maintained his integrity and his walk with God. And what I want us to do this evening is to see that. That even though we may live a righteous life, a life which has no reason really for opposition and criticism, but still, things may be very difficult for us, and we might experience all kinds of difficulties and problems. Now, I think we may find in the experience of Joseph something that resonates with our experience as individuals and our experience as God's people today. Now, the first point, or the first stage in Joseph's life, was the family that he was born into. It was a family where he experienced favoritism and jealousy. Profound jealousy and hatred. It's interesting, this is the family out of which God brings the 12 tribes of Israel. And yet in many ways it was a dysfunctional family, seriously dysfunctional. Through no fault of his own, Jacob ended up marrying Leah rather than Rachel. And so he had more than one wife and then two of handmaids. A handmaid of Leah and Rachel each became his wives as well. And there were children born to each of those mothers. And wherever there is polygamy, there are always stresses and strains. And it was like that in Jacob's family. There was jealousy between the wives. And Leah knew that she was not loved as Rachel was loved. Rachel was the love of Jacob's life. And so it is no surprise that when Joseph was born to Rachel, that Joseph had a very special place in Jacob's heart, as did Benjamin, who was born later, especially as Rachel died. And so within this large family of many sons, Joseph especially had a special place in his father's heart. In our reading, we are told that Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. Now, none of that was Joseph's fault. We don't choose the families that we are born into. Perhaps you come from a dysfunctional family. Perhaps you've become a Christian, and yet many people in your family are not Christians. And there are many tensions and pressures, and even in Christian families too, there will be pressures and tensions. Not all will come to faith. People may live in different ways, and in fact, children may go in different ways from the things they've learnt and they've known. And there are challenges that are there in our families. We didn't choose our families. Our families didn't choose us either. And that's the situation Joseph had to live with. His brothers, by and large, were older than he was. And as he was growing up, they were older, they were bigger, and they were stronger, and they were dominant, and they were the sons, some of them, of Leah. And they knew that their mum wasn't really loved by Jacob as Joseph's mum was. Joseph had to cope with all that. There was jealousy, there was hatred, and Joseph experienced that in a very real way. And his father was very unwise. Not only did he love Joseph more than any of the others, but he made that very clear because he gave him this coat of many colors, this richly ornamented robe, this special robe. And you try to think, well, on what occasion did he give it to him? Perhaps he was giving gifts to all the sons and saying, well, you have this and you have this. And then he said, no, Joseph, I've got something special for you. And he brings out this expensive, special robe. And this is yours, Joseph. In fact, when Joseph goes looking for his brothers, he's got his robe on. His dad says, you wear that when you go to see your brothers. How unwise Jacob was in dealing with his family. And here's Joseph living in that situation. His brothers find it difficult to even speak to him, especially when he has dreams. Not any old dream, but special dreams and repeated dreams. Remember, at this time there was no Old Testament. God revealed himself in various ways to the patriarchs, and he revealed himself to Joseph through a dream, two dreams. And they were striking, and Joseph was aware that they were not just things that came out of his own mind and out of his own heart. He wasn't just having big thoughts and thinking he was important. It was God revealing himself to Joseph. That would be significant later when he interpreted the dreams of others. And the first was that he was with his brothers in the field, and they each had sheaves of corn, and Joseph's sheaf rose above them, and the other sheaves gathered round and bowed down to him. And so he told his brothers the dream, and they hated him all the more. Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us? And there was hatred. And when that theme was repeated in the second dream, this time of the sun and the moon and the 11 stars bowing down to him, not only were the brothers angry with him, but his father too challenged him, rebuked him. What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you? Jacob should have known better, because he had dreams too. And perhaps he did discern it, because we're told he kept the matter in mind. But here is God revealing himself to Joseph. Here is God revealing his truth. And the fact that he reveals his truth to Joseph only deepens the antagonism of his brothers to him. And so here he is, growing up in that dysfunctional family. I wonder whether your family is dysfunctional. Do you have to face opposition, antagonism, jealousy, even hatred within your family? It's perhaps one of the trials of your Christian life. And because you pray for the members of your family, you long that they will come to know the Lord Jesus as well, and yet it's hard even to speak to them. They won't allow you to speak. And well, Joseph did explain his dreams, but they didn't want to hear any more from him. And that's the context in which he was living. He was just a 17-year-old young man, teenager, adolescent, and here he was living in that situation. But in it, he lived with integrity. He reported what God had revealed to him, and he coped with the jealousy, the hatred, the antagonism against him. But that antagonism led to the next part of his experience, where again you see Joseph's integrity, because the brothers have gone to graze the father's flocks near Shechem. And Jacob says to Joseph, well, why don't you go to see your brothers to see if everything is well with them and everything is well with the flocks? And Joseph agrees to go. He might have said, I don't want to go and see them. They hate me. And if I went and I was somewhere in a strange place, who knows what would happen to me? But he went. And it wasn't easy to find them because they'd moved on from Shechem. And you have that picture of him wandering around in the field, not knowing where to look for them, until a man tells him, no, they've moved on to Dothan. And again, Joseph could easily have said, oh, well, I tried to find them, but I didn't. I tried to do what my father wanted me to do, but I'll go back now. And perhaps later he reflected on what had happened, and perhaps he almost wished that he had gone back and that he hadn't kept on going, but he did, because he was a young man of integrity. His father had sent him to see if everything was well with his brothers, everything well with the flocks. And so he travelled on to Dothan. Don't know that he'd ever been there before. It was a strange place, a long way from home. And when his brothers saw him in the distance, they plotted to kill him. Just imagine that. One thing, isn't it, to have jealousy, to have hatred. But actually, the situation has got to such a point that they decide to kill him. And there's a reason why they do it. It's here comes this dreamer. Let's kill him, throw him into one of those cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. In other words, throw him where he'll never be found. And then they say this, then we'll see what comes of his dreams. He's got big ideas. Now, those ideas are from God. And ultimately, the brothers at this point are opposing God and his purposes for Joseph, and indeed his purposes for them through Joseph. But the depth of their antagonism and hatred is profound. They're going to kill their brother. Reuben tries his best to save him and has him thrown into a cistern in order that he might later rescue him from their hands. But Joseph is stripped of his robe, and he's thrown into a cistern, and we're just given a little bit of detail. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. It was a hot country, and there was no water, no food for Joseph. And his brothers sat down for a meal, but he wasn't having any. He could hear them eating, but they weren't giving him anything. And he was experiencing a depth of hatred that he had never known before. And then the traders come along, the Ishmaelites, on their way to Egypt. And Judah has an idea. What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? We might just as well get some money for him. We won't get anything for him if we kill him and throw him in a cistern. So we won't lay our hands on him. And then he says this, after all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood, but there's nothing kind in that. But his blood won't be on our hands if we sell him as a slave. And they all said, yeah, that's a good idea. We'll get some money for him. And so they get 20 shekels of silver for him. And they sell him to these strangers. They sell him to these traders. And they take him to Egypt. And when Reuben gets back, he's distressed. And he tears his clothes. And he says, what can I do? Where can I turn? How can I go back to my father? But they take the robe and they dip it in goat's blood and they go back and they say to the father, we found this robe. Examine it. Let us see whether it is your son's robe. And of course, it was bound to be his son's robe. It seems it was a unique robe. And he draws the conclusion that it is. It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces, and Jacob sinks into an unconsolable sorrow over the death of his son, the assumed death of his son. And the brothers just stand by and let their father draw that conclusion. And Joseph, well, he's on his way to Egypt. And that must have been a very difficult journey for him. It was a long journey, a hot journey. I doubt very much that the traders said to him, well, look, we've got a nice horse here. Perhaps you'd like to ride it. It would make the journey rather easy for you. And this boy has grown up being specially treated, but there was no special treatment for him now. They'd bought him. He was a slave. He was their property. They possibly bound him to make sure he didn't run away because he was young and fit and strong. And he walked all the way to Egypt, and every step took him further away from the place he knew, and his father and his family. And he must have wondered, well, what is happening to me? And he arrives in Egypt, and it's a totally different place. The culture is different. He doesn't understand the language of the people. And the intention of the traders is to sell him for a profit, to get more money for him than they paid for him. And he ends up in the slave market, and Potiphar comes to look at him. And he sees that he's a good specimen. He'll be able to do good work for him. And Potiphar is an eminent official in Pharaoh's court, the captain of the guard. And he buys him. And Joseph is now a slave, serving in the house of Potiphar. And so here he is in a foreign land, far from home, in circumstances so different from the ones he'd grown up in. What happens when he's there? Well, he has to learn to trust God. You know, sometimes we think we are trusting God when what we're actually doing is trusting in familiar circumstances. We know the place where we live. We know the people around us. We feel quite secure in that. And we have an idea of what the future may hold. And we also know that if problems arise, we know what we would try to do. We know the people we would go to seek help from. But when you're in a situation where you don't know anybody, and it's a strange and foreign land, you may learn to trust God in a new way. And sometimes after people have gone on summer teams or short-term mission experiences, we ask them in UFM to tell us something of how they got on and what things they learned. And one of the things that they often say is, I learned to trust God in a new way. My prayer life became more serious and meaningful because I was facing so many new situations. I wasn't in a familiar situation, and the Lord proved his faithfulness to me. And Joseph does that. He doesn't start to follow the religion of the Egyptians. You know, when young people go away from home, when they go to study or they go to work, it's a testing time, isn't it? They've grown up in the church, they've grown up in a Christian family, but now they have a measure of freedom to do what they want to do. And sometimes they go and they go in a new direction, and they do other things. And they follow the ways of the world. But Joseph doesn't do that. He maintains his trust in God. And he doesn't follow the religion of the Egyptians. He remembers the things that he's learned about God in his father's family. And he acts consistently with those things. In fact, in Potiphar's house, we're told that Potiphar noticed that God was with Joseph. Potiphar didn't know God, but there was something different about this young man. In fact, we're told a number of times in the story of Joseph, the Lord was with Joseph. Now, whether Joseph felt that, I don't know. To what extent he felt it, how he felt it. He was in a place he didn't want to be in. And in those sort of situations, we often sort of rebel in our spirit. Why has God allowed this to happen? Why am I here? But Joseph finds, as his father Jacob found when he left home and went to seek a wife, and he slept in Bethel with a stone for his pillow, and he had a dream of a ladder reaching up to heaven, angels ascending and descending on it. And then he woke up, he said, surely God is in this place. and I didn't know it. And Joseph didn't have that kind of dream, but he found that even in Egypt, God was there. God can sometimes bring us to situations which we never wanted to be in, and yet we know that he is with us. That doesn't mean that everything gets sorted out and Joseph's able to go back home. He has to stay in Egypt. But God is with him. And when Potiphar sees that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, God's blessing was upon Joseph. That blessing which makes rich, the proverb says, and adds no sorrow with it. There was something about him, about the way he did things. And everything he did, it seemed to go well. And Potiphar realizes that this man is a man he can totally trust. And Joseph finds favor in Potiphar's eyes. And Potiphar puts him in charge of his household. And he entrusts to his care everything he owns. In fact, from the time that he puts Joseph in charge, God's blessing is on Potiphar's house as well. And on the fields that he owns. And so he leaves Joseph to care for everything he has. And the only thing he bothered about was what he ate. But everything else, Joseph will deal with that. And here he is, Joseph finding security. You see, he's living with integrity. Things have gone wrong, seriously wrong. He no doubt remembered the things his brother had said to him, the way they'd handled him, and the way they'd sold him after planning to kill him. He must have picked up the fact that they wanted to kill him. And he thought about his father, what his father would think, and how the brothers had gone back to tell lies about what had happened. And he had all those things going on in his mind, and yet he was able to commit those things to God and to live with integrity. And perhaps to believe, well, now things are settling down. It's been tough, but now I'm okay. And if I carry on doing what is right here, well, things will turn out well with me. But they didn't. Because as he was being trusted by Potiphar, there was something else that happened. He'd lived in a family where there was favoritism and jealousy. He'd experienced antagonism and hatred from his brothers. But now there's a new thing. And it's got to do with his morality. And he's accused of immorality because Potiphar's wife is attracted to Joseph. And we're told very simply that Joseph is well built and handsome. And after he'd been in the house for a while, the Potiphar's wife wanted to sleep with him. After all, he was a slave. He belonged to them. And she thought, I can do what I like with this man. And he'll do what I tell him. And day after day, she made clear to him what she wanted to do. And Joseph maintained his integrity. We're not told he wasn't attracted to her. We're not told it wasn't a temptation. In fact, it seems to me that the way he answers, the way he reasons when he is faced with this temptation and again and again, indicates that he was feeling tempted. Because this is how he speaks to her. He says, with me in charge, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. I've been given everything, but not you, because you're married to Potiphar. Now, there are no Ten Commandments at this point that have been given, but God's law is written on Joseph's heart, and he knows that this is contrary to God's will. It is a sin. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she speaks to him day after day, he keeps on saying no, he will not do it, until the day comes when she is on her own with him, and she is determined, and the only thing he can do is to run out of the house. The New Testament tells us that we are to flee from immorality, and that's what Joseph does, but his cloak is left behind. And then this woman tells lies about him. And she calls the other servants and she said, look. And here, the fact that he's an outsider comes to the fore. This Hebrew who has been brought to us has made sport of me. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. And when he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. She tells the opposite of what had actually happened. But when Potiphar hears the story, he is burning with anger. He believes that Joseph has betrayed his trust, which he hasn't. And Joseph is put into prison. You see, he'd maintained his integrity. He'd acted rightly. He'd been conscious of God. He resisted those temptations. He was faithful to his master. But now he's falsely accused, and he's put into prison. So his reputation is attacked. You know, sometimes that happens, that people distort things that we have said, things that we have done. And it's one thing to experience problems and difficulties. It's another thing to have your integrity, your reputation impugned. And someone says that you've acted immorally, you've acted wrongly in some situation, when you haven't. But that's the situation. And nothing Joseph can say can persuade Potiphar that what Potiphar's wife is saying is not true. You can understand the dynamic of that. She's his wife. Potiphar must believe her, whatever he may think. And he has Joseph put into prison. And he's put into the king's prison. And it's a place of particular high security. And it's a hard place to be. And here is Joseph. He'd been in Potiphar's house. Everything was under his control. He was showing his integrity day by day. And now, quite unjustly, he's been put into prison. He's his father's favorite son. He's living in a foreign country. But he's an outsider. And there's no one to speak up for him and to say, you know, Joseph's not like that, even though he had proved himself during his time in Potiphar's house. And he's there for something he didn't do. And he's suffering unjustly. It's a very difficult thing, isn't it, to cope with. And this is one thing on another. And yet Joseph maintains his integrity. He doesn't say, well, I'm giving up on this faith in God. I've been trusting God all these years. And yet look what's happened to me. My brothers hated me. I was sold as a slave. I proved faithful to my master. I was falsely accused, and here I am in prison. And yet, again, we're told the Lord was with him. It's a wonderful thing, isn't it? Even when everything's going wrong, the Lord is with him. That's true for us as Christians too. The Lord is with us. As Jesus sent his disciples out into the world to preach the gospel, he said, I am with you always. And you read it in the book of the Acts of the Apostles, and all the experience that came to the apostles and the early Christians. And in all of it, the Lord was with them. And the Lord was with Joseph and showed him kindness. And again, grants him favor in the eyes of the man in charge, the prison warder. And the prison warder realizes that this is no ordinary prisoner. Warders are able to discern between different prisoners. And he knows that this man's different. Not only is he a foreigner, but there's something about him. And it isn't long before he is putting Joseph in charge again. And he's made responsible for all that was done. And the warder pays no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. He can be trusted. He does it well. Everything works out well. He deals with the other prisoners well. He makes sure they keep the rules. He runs the prison day by day, and he's just a wonderful man to have here. And in one sense you can say, well, things are going well for Joseph. Well, they are, but he's still in prison. He's lost his liberty. Can't walk out. His reputation is still tarnished. We don't know that Joseph's reputation concerning Potiphar's wife was ever cleared, even though later he rises to prominence. There was always that shadow, but you remember what he did with Potiphar's wife? He had to live with that. But here he is again, showing his integrity, living with the stigma of immorality, and just day by day, living in faith in God. The period we're looking at goes from the age of 17 to the age of 30. When you think about the significance of those years in anyone's life, they're formative years, aren't they? It's Some of the young people in the church have been getting exam results, and perhaps they're planning to go away to university. And well, Joseph was at about that age. And all the things that he'd hoped to do, all the things he'd hoped to achieve. But he didn't have a chance to do that because of what his brothers did and because of how things turned out for him. And here he is in prison, and he's beginning to wonder, what can I do? How can I clear my name? How can I escape this situation? Have you known sometimes something of that helplessness? When you want to try and sort a situation out, but there's nothing you can do except to trust God. And to say to him, I don't understand what's happening, but I trust you. I remember a lady some years ago in North Wales who tragically lost her husband. He was a relatively young man, and they had young children. And one day he suffered a heart attack, and he died. And the wife was there in the room where her husband was, where he had died. The pastor was with her, and the pastor prayed, and then the wife prayed. And she said, Lord, I don't understand why this is happening, but I trust you. I trust you. And there are times when that's what we've got to say, isn't it? We just trust. We cannot understand. We walk by faith and not by sight. And Joseph must have been thinking, what's it all about? Because he's a righteous man. He's suffering unjustly. And then two men come into the prison. And they both serve Pharaoh. One is a cupbearer, the chief cupbearer. One is the chief baker. And they've displeased Pharaoh. He's angry with them, and he put them in prison. And while they're there, they have dreams. And they don't know what the dreams mean, but they're troubled by the dreams. And they say there's no one to interpret them. And Joseph says, well, it's God who gives interpretation, dreams. Tell me your dreams. And the cupbearer tells him about how he saw a vine with branches on it, and he picked the grapes and he squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup. And Pharaoh took the cup from his hand. And Joseph said, yes, in 3 days you will be restored to your position. And then the baker tells him his dream about the birds eating the bread from three baskets of bread on his head, the top basket, they're eating the bread. And Joseph said, yes, in 3 days' time, you will die. You will be hanged on a tree. And so he interprets the dreams, and the dreams come to pass. Someone comes to the prison and says to the cupbearer, Pharaoh has given the order for you to be released. And he's overjoyed, and Joseph says to him, but when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison, for I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon. Here's his chance. There's somebody in prison who's going out. And Joseph needs someone more important than Potiphar to plead his cause. And Pharaoh is the most important man, and this man's going to be standing by the side of the Pharaoh. Please put a word in for me. And you know how sometimes in situations we think, I can begin to see now how God is going to open a way for me to escape. And Joseph feels hope in his heart. As the cupbearer goes, he says, I'll remember. But he didn't. He forgot Joseph. And he just got back into his life as a cupbearer for 2 full years. 2 more years, Joseph remains in prison day after day after day. A broken promise. You know, sometimes people say, well, I'll always be there for you. I'll help you. I'll never forget you. But we do. And we don't do what we promised. And the cupbearer didn't do what he had promised to do. And the result was that Joseph languished in prison. The prison warder was still trusting him every day. He was showing his integrity every day. But he was still there for 2 full years. And so his problems continue through all these years. And life is like that, isn't it? We don't just have 1 or 2 problems. Sometimes it's one after another after another. And we tend to say, well, I could cope with 1, perhaps 2. But it just seems to have gone on and on and on. And this period is almost half of Joseph's life. And they're his early adult years. And here he is languishing in prison. What possible purpose could God have in allowing these things to happen to him? Because after all, he'd had these dreams, hadn't he? The dreams were that he was going to be prominent, that his brothers would bow down to him, his father and mother would bow down to him. But everything that's happening to him seems to be the opposite of that. And sometimes it's like that for us, isn't it? We're Christians. We know God. We know the Lord Jesus Christ as our Saviour. And he's promised good to us. And yet, things happen that we'd never expected. Bad things happen. One thing after another. We're helpless. And Joseph's lost his liberty. He's lost his reputation. He's lost his father and his family. And he's living in prison. And now this man has forgotten him. And he perhaps kept on saying, surely he'll remember me. There'll be a knock on the door. But there wasn't until 2 years later, when Pharaoh had dreams. Dreams of 7 fat cows and 7 thin cows coming out of the river. And the thin cows ate the fat cows. 7 fat ears of corn, healthy ears. And they were eaten by 7 thin ears. And when Pharaoh wakes up, he's troubled. And he wants to understand what his dreams are about. And no one can tell him. And suddenly, the chief cupbearer says, today, I am reminded of my shortcomings. And he tells a story about how he was in prison. And there was a young Hebrew in prison. And he was able to interpret dreams. And he interpreted them accurately. What he said came to pass. And I was restored. It all happened exactly as he said. And so Pharaoh sent for Joseph. And Joseph's told, Pharaoh wants you. Pharaoh's the most important man in the world of his day. And he was quickly brought. He shaved and changed his clothes. Perhaps he didn't have the opportunity to shave in prison, or he didn't do it. But he shaves. He washes. He puts new clothes on because he's coming into the presence of Pharaoh. And Pharaoh tells him about his dreams and says, I understand you can interpret dreams. And Joseph says, no, I can't. But God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. And Pharaoh tells him the dreams. And Joseph says, the dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. The 7 cows, the 7 years are 7 years. There'll be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. And God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. And the repeating of the dreams means that God has determined that this will certainly, he's firmly decided that he will do it, and he'll do it soon. And then he goes on to say to Pharaoh, this is what you need to do. Look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest during the 7 years of abundance and collect the food for the during the good years, ready for the years of famine that will come, so that the Egyptians might not be ruined by this famine. And the plan seems good to Pharaoh and all his officials. And then Pharaoh says, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God? And he says to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace. You've been in charge of Potiphar's house. You've been in charge of the prison. Now he's in charge of Pharaoh's palace. And all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. He takes the signet ring, puts it on his finger, and he dresses him in a robe of fine linen, puts a gold chain round his neck, and he rides in a chariot behind Pharaoh. And as he rides in his chariot, people shout, make way for Joseph. He's come out of prison, he's shaved, he's got different clothes on, and here he is now. He's the second most powerful man in the whole world. It must have been amazing for him to take it all in. Out of the prison, into this place of power and authority. Just as God said it would happen. That's what God said would happen. His word was true. God was faithful to his word. And the interesting thing, the striking thing about it is that nothing that happens to Joseph is in any way out of the plan of God. Because Joseph has to be taken from his father's house to Egypt. And he has to come to the attention of Pharaoh, the most powerful man in all the world. And it's through that strange and winding way that God brings him to that place. At every moment, in everything that was happening, Joseph was on course for God's purposes for him, and indeed through him, for Egypt, for the world, and also for the people of God, who were going to be saved in a time of famine, because there was corn in Egypt. Those dreams were true. God kept his word. And you know, we need to have the same confidence when God leads us through our lives, through strange and perplexing ways. We all have an idea, don't we, about how things will work out. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes you have exam results and they're not as good as you hoped, and you can't go where you want to go, and you wonder, well, why has this happened? Sometimes perhaps you don't get the job you hope for, you lose your job, or things work out badly in all sorts of ways, and you think, what is God doing? Well, he's working out his purposes, and he's leading. He's not punishing us. It's really important to see that Joseph isn't being punished. That's why I think I was wrong in understanding he was a spoilt brat. God wasn't against him, God was for him. You see, when things are difficult, we begin to believe that God is somehow punishing us. It makes the pain even more intense. I mean, if God were to treat us as we deserve, then indeed life would be difficult. But he deals with us graciously and kindly. And he's with Joseph through all those situations. In other words, he sustains him and he gives him hope in his heart, even when all things seem against him, to drive him to despair. We sang that hymn of William Cooper's earlier. God moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm. Isn't that a wonderful picture of God? The sea. We've been in Aberystwyth this week, and the weather has been rough at times, and the sea is rough. And where is God? Well, he plants his footsteps in the sea. It doesn't matter how deep it is. He's greater than the depths of the sea and the storms. He rides upon the storm. This is a picture of God in his providence. He is in control. He is guiding all things deep in unfathomable minds of never failing skill. He treasures up his bright designs and works his sovereign will. Ye fearful saints, fresh courage take. The clouds you so much dread are big with mercy and shall break in blessings on your head. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. His purposes will ripen fast, unfolding every hour. The bud may have a bitter taste, but sweet will be the flower. Blind unbelief is sure to err and scan his work in vain. God is his own interpreter, and he will make it plain. See, Joseph couldn't understand it till he got to that point where he was in the chariot and people were saying, make way. And he was able to say, God has made me fruitful in the land of my sufferings. Perhaps you're going through great difficulties at the moment and you don't understand what's going on and you're troubled by what is happening. But God is with you. God is guiding you. God has his hand upon you, and all the promises that he has made for you in Jesus Christ will be fulfilled. And one day he will bring all his people to heaven and to the place that he has prepared for us. And that's why I say Joseph is a reminder to us of the Lord Jesus Christ and of his sufferings. Peter in his letter, his first letter, says, when they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. And sometimes we just have to trust God, and he will make it plain. Joseph is a great example to us in that. And you know, it's often in the hardest of all experiences that we learn most about God, and we're able to trust him and know that he is our Father, and nothing happens without him. And we grow in our understanding of him. We grow in grace, and he gives us grace, and he gives us his help. And everything that happens is bringing us to that place that he wants us to be in. And so we don't judge him by feeble sense, but we trust him for his grace. Like Joseph, there are frowning providences, but behind them he hides a smiling face. So Joseph is a great encouragement to us, even in all the problems and difficulties he has, because God was with him, and he made him fruitful in the land of his suffering. May we know that same grace and that same fruitfulness. Amen. Let's sing.